if the equipment is working correctly.
Okay.
I'm in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I'm with Mr. John Griffin, who's the principal of E.E. Smith High School. We're having this interview in the athletic director's office because there's a home game going on, and he slipped away to have this interview with me. Today's date is February 15th, 1991. Now, Mr. Griffin, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and say that you know that this interview is being recorded.
Okay. My name is John R. Griffin, Jr., and I'm principal here at E. Smith Senior High School, and I'm happy to do this interview tonight on behalf of a young lady who's doing it for a very worthy cause, and I hope I can help in this regard.
Okay, thank you. I told you before we started that I'm doing some research on black high school principals. Back in 1964, there were over 200. The last man I interviewed said there were 219 black high school principals in 64. And last year, when I wrote to the State Department and asked for a listing of high school principals, they sent me a list of 41 and 89. And some of those 41 are not principals of traditional high schools, they're principals of alternative schools. So that means they're less than 40, were less than 41 last year. You are in the group of the 1989 principals. I want you to tell me, we're just going to talk, and tell me some things about your principalship. What I'm doing is comparing the role perceptions of principals from those two groups. I want you to tell me a little about yourself and how you became a high school principal. You might tell me, you know, where you were born and
I'm a native Fayettevillean, and I'm a graduate of E. Smith Senior High School. Uh-huh. Right, and I began teaching on the junior high level. And I received a master's degree in administration and supervision from the University of North Carolina in 1966. In the summer of that year, I was appointed assistant to the principal at Washington Drive Junior High School. The principal at that time was a gentleman named Mr. W.T. Brown, who later became Dr. W.T. Brown, who's my immediate superior now, as Associate Superintendent for Secondary Education here in Cumberland County. I served with him for 4 years as his assistant principal, and at the end of the four-year period I became an elementary principal, and I stayed an elementary principal for 1 year. Then Dr. Brown was moved here to E. Smith as principal, and I became principal of the junior high school where we had served together, and I stayed there for 2 years. Then it was in 1973, the fall of 73, he became assistant superintendent in the Fayetteville City School System, and I became principal here at E. Smith. So I've been principal at E. Smith since 1973.
Mm-hmm. I see, since 73. All right, so you just moved up.
When I became principal, just for the record, I think there were only four black senior high school principals in North Carolina.
Four. Yeah. I know it went down. I didn't know it had gone that low. I thought it had gone maybe 13, but if you say...
Well, to my knowledge, I don't know of over four, at the most five.
Mm-hmm.
Because there, I think there was a principal at Dudley High School was black, principal at Hillside, John Lucas was black.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman who's the superintendent in Brunswick County now was a principal of the high school there at that time, and I think there was one other in the western part of the state. Maybe I was the fifth one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hankins. Do you know P.R. Hankins?
No.
I think he's the superintendent now in Brunswick County. He was, if I recall correctly, a principal at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So there were more than five.
Well, I know that after these
in senior high schools.
That's the reason.
Diploma awarding high schools. Right.
I'm only dealing with high school principals because I thought that was significant that we.
Well, if you also know that it has changed because how many historically black schools are still in existence? See, you know, that's another thing. When we look back through the years, how many of those schools that were in existence when I went to E. Smith in the 50s
mm-hmm.
are still there?
Mm-hmm.
And there are not over five or six of those.
Right. The Hillside, Atkins.
No, not Atkins. Carver.
Carver.
Okay, where's Charlotte?
Mm-hmm.
E. Smith. Dudley. And those are the only ones I know right now.
All right. Did you have any educators in your family?
My mother finished Fayetteville State Normal. and started out teaching and left the teaching profession to go to Fort Bragg as a civilian employee, and she retired from Fort Bragg. Mm-hmm. And my aunt, who just recently passed away this past weekend and funeralized the day before yesterday, is a retired teacher here in Cumberland County. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
And my daddy came here to Fayetteville State Normal in 1927 on a little athletic scholarship to play ball at State Normal. Mm-hmm. But he never taught anything. He just went there a while and then started working at Fort Bragg, too.
So your family was pretty well
educated. Right.
Yes. Tell me something about E.E. Smith. I want you to just tell me something about this school, its history.
Okay, well, this is what I call a historically black school. Its roots were founded in the black community because at one time this school only served the black population in this community. In this entire city, all the black high school students came to Smith. And the black high school students at Fort Bragg came to Smith. And we began in that way, and I think it was in 67, before I got here, that the school was integrated, and we started serving a multicultural clientele. And we continue to do that. Right now, we are approximately 60% of the students in our school are black, and 35% of them are Caucasian, and 5% Hispanic and others, other origin. So that's where we are now, with about 50% of our teaching staff being black, and 50% basically white.
How many assistants do you have?
I have 3 full-time assistants.
And how many students do you have?
We have about 1,050 students in grades 10 through 12.
That's a large faculty. Now I'm going to ask you something about your responsibilities, and I'll give you areas, and I want you to just tell me how you deal with those roles, those responsibilities.
All right.
Supervision of personnel and selection of teachers.
Supervision of personnel here at the school, from the effective teacher training standpoint, we basically do by delegating some of the work to the associate principals. We call our assistants associates, and there's one associate who's an associate lead principal, because I'm a lead principal for this attendance area. So I have an associate lead principal.
And so the city is divided into?
The county is divided into 8 attendance areas, and I'm the lead principal for the East Smith attendance area.
I see.
And I have an associate lead principal.
I see.
Okay, and I have one associate who only works with the 50% who have one visit. From an instructional standpoint, for the effective teacher training. And then one associate and I work with all of the initially certified.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a total of 18 teachers. And then the remaining 3 visit people I divide among the other 2 associates. The athletic director, who is also the associate lead, does 3-time visits. The female associate who works with pupil accounting does a portion of those, and I take the initially certified and a few others. I like to work with beginning teachers.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do about selecting your teachers?
Okay, basically the selection process, unless it speaks to a unique area, I make the decisions myself. Unique area being foreign languages. If I need a Spanish teacher, I may ask the chair of the department or one of the veteran Spanish teachers to assist me in the selection process. If I need a vocational teacher, I'll do the same. If I need someone in ROTC, and for example, a sergeant or non-commissioned officer, I'll ask the officer to assist me in that. If I need someone in guidance, I'll ask the guidance chair to assist me with that, because those are specialized areas, and I basically am a generalist, and I need their input to talk about the specialties that the people bring to the field.
How do you get the people to interview? Is there a pool downtown?
There is a pool downtown, mm-hmm. and I go in and I ask for, if I need a science teacher, I need the science folders, and they give me the science folders, and there's a conference room. I can sit and look, pick out persons, and based upon what I see from the conferences that they have, because they do initial interviews, and other information from recommendations, et cetera, if they have previous employment. And I pick out a pool of people, a cadre of people, maybe 6 to 8 that look like top prospects. Some fields you don't have that many, some you have a multiplicity, as you know. And then I will call them in for interviews. I usually let my administrative coordinator, who is a female lady who just sort of is my girl Friday, she sets up the appointments for me, then they come in and I talk with them.
Curriculum and instruction.
Okay, as far as curriculum is concerned, the attitude that we take about curriculum here is that the departments talk with me and make recommendations on what areas they'd like to do differently. For example, if they want to add a course, we just did that. We just talked about our offers for next year. They will present the offering to me. They will write up the course description and requirements, but it has to go before the curriculum committee for the county before it can be included. But the departments provide me with that information. For example, if in mathematics they want to offer something in statistics and probability, they'll talk to me about that. If that's not a course that we are already offering in the county, they'll have to write up a course description, requirements, etc. It goes before the curriculum committee, it's approved by the board, then it goes because of part of the course dictionary for the county.
Do you have a lot of input? Suppose they come to you and it's something that you really don't think is worthy to go before the curriculum committee.
The first thing I want them to do is give me justification for it. Why should we offer this? What is it that you know about it that causes you to feel that this is something in the best interest of our young people? What does the data tell us about it? Is this something that's a growing field? Is this something we know that as we look toward the 21st century, there will be needs for with young people? If so, let's go with it. If not, if we look out there and we know that the field is saturated in this area, this is not something that's going to support a direct goal that youngsters should subscribe to. We don't need it. So I asked them to give me some basic information. You know, they've got to substantiate it. It's not just a wish list.
So you sound like you are the instructional leader.
I try to be.
Discipline.
Yes.
How do you deal with discipline?
Well, presently, the three associates work with the grade level. One associate takes 10th grade, one takes 11th grade, one takes 12th grade. And they will follow those students right on up. The associate with the juniors this year had the sophomores next year. And they'll stay right with those kids so that every year they will be able to talk with them about the progress that they're making and the kinds of problems that they're having. And if they're making improvement, they'll learn the parents and how to deal with them if they have any special needs.
Do you do the same, use that same system with the guidance counselor?
Guidance requested that we don't do that because of the specialties. For example, the 11th grade counselor is also the testing coordinator. There's some things that he does that are unique. The senior counselor does some things in college prep, recommendations and all. They would rather stay with it like it is. I gave them the opportunity to make that decision. This year, they decided to keep it just like it was. They thought they could work well with it. Some schools I know do it differently.
Well, I know we've been toying with it. Yeah. Transportation.
One associate is...
Well, let me back up a minute. Do you consider discipline a problem at Eastman?
No.
Everything seems to be going on?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a problem to the degree that we must determine solutions on a continuous basis. And what can we do to cause the youngsters to feel that they must understand what's proper and what's not proper? I have found that with most of our young people, if we teach them the correct way, they don't have a lot of difficulty. A lot of them bring to us a lack of knowledge of what's expected of them. And once we teach them like proper behavior and assembly programs, you know, taking your hat off in the building, we don't wear hats in here. We don't wear hats in the gymnasium out there because there's a reason why you don't wear hats in the public, inside of a building. We explain that to them. So then they suddenly, they know we don't wear hats at Smith.
Where do you explain these things?
We explain them to them in our meetings with students. And right now we have something called student staff development, which is a bit unique. But I've continued to do it. Some people might question it, but I think it's very justified. Twice a month we have student staff development. All the teachers go for one period of time, 45-minute period, they meet together for staff development, 50 minutes, it really is. And the sophomores meet together, the juniors meet together, and the seniors meet together. And from time to time, we have resource people to come and talk with them. And then I'm doing staff development with teachers. See, because as we move into effective school stuff and talk about elements of teaching and all, I've got to do some teaching and reteaching with the teachers. Mm-hmm. So this gives me a chance to end the school day. Ironically, the school system is proposing a calendar next year where everybody will get out in an attendance area twice a month early so we can do the same.
Oh, so your plan is working so well that it's being adopted by
well,
the system?
Well, they're going to legitimize it by making the school day longer each day.
Oh.
But see, the basic education plan talks to there should be students should be involved in a learning situation for 5.5 hours. If that what we're doing is not teaching and learning, I don't know what it is. So I feel very good about that, and I think I can justify it. So that's working.
Transportation.
Okay, the supervision of transportation. Supervision of staff transportation for the public school transportation in the the orange buses is designated to an assistant, one of the associates, I should say, deals with the transportation. He also deals with transportation in-house for field trips, etc. We have a system for that. Half of our transportation needs are handled by Fort Bragg and Bragg Bus Lines because we serve all of the students at Fort Bragg and Pope.
You do serve the high school students from Fort Bragg?
Yeah, there's no high school at Fort Bragg and Pope. So all of those kids come here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they handle their own transportation to the degree that they set up the routes and all and send them to us. But if those drivers have disciplinary problems, they give them to us and we handle those for them.
Utilization of funds.
Okay, utilization of funds and budgeting of funds is done by on a request basis and prioritized through departments. And basically, I will give them an allotment at the beginning of the year, and vocationally, and I give them to them in the spring. And they make allotments and requests to me. We prioritize those, and I establish a limit. And each department gets a certain amount of money. They meet together and propose to me what they like to have in 5100 category. And then if they give me the orders in the spring, when summer comes, as soon as July 1 comes, I send my orders in. Some of the stuff is here when they get here.
Mm-hmm. Cafeteria management.
Okay, the cafeteria management for me is basically a set player. I am the person who is responsible for the cafeteria. I have an outstanding manager. She does most of the managing. She only calls on me on a needs basis. We confer on employment only. If she has to change lines, she wants to do something uniquely with the menu, she talks with me about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the day-to-day operation, she handles. I'm responsible for the receipts presently. And that means that every day they come to my designee and give them the deposit, and we deposit the money. I was also responsible for payroll, but as of the 1st of January, they allowed the managers to start signing their own payrolls.
Mm-hmm.
So I do very little with the day-to-day operation of the cafeteria.
So there is no menu that's planned downtown Central?
It is.
Oh,
there is, right.
Mm-hmm.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
But see, we have an opportunity to do some things differently.
Mm-hmm.
I've got three lines and a salad bar.
Uh-huh.
And, we can do baked potato soup, different kinds of things. And she might say, I think, like now we're trying to do french fries every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we do baked potatoes twice a week. Those kinds of things, little wrinkles that cause kids to feel good about
mm-hmm.
eating cafeteria because motivating them to eat is a difficult task itself.
Oh, and the cafeteria has to make
yeah, they want
funds.
Everything to be fast food type.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's got to be pizza, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, McRibs. They want something like that all of the time. And so it's a bit of a challenge to us.
It is. Mm-hmm. Building and grounds.
One of the associate principals is designated with the authority to manage and direct the custodial staff, which includes 8 custodians and a head custodian. He meets with that head custodian every Monday morning and plans with him what we have to do for that week. For example, tonight is Parent Appreciation Night. They've got some different things to do. I have 5 guys working at night, 3 people working in the daytime, 1 lady, 2 men in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And but he directs all of that. Mm-hmm. He does inspecting and all. He does everything but hiring and firing. I do that. Mm-hmm. He can recommend, but I reserve that right.
Community relations.
That's a family thing. All of us are PR people. Our students are our best PR people. Our teachers are PR people. Our custodians are family. We say we have a family. All of us are about PR, mm-hmm. because what we say makes a difference. And if the kids love the school, they're going to tell other folks they love the school. The teachers feel good about what John Griffin is doing. They're going to tell people, you ought to be working with us because we do it this way and we like what we are doing. So we are all into the business of public relations. There is no planned public relations program at this school other than how we disseminate information for public notice. Mm-hmm. And there's a committee that does that. Mm-hmm.
How do you think the people in this community feel about E.E. Smith?
I feel from my desk that generally people have a pretty good feeling about E.E. Smith. We've been rather fortunate from the standpoint that for the most part we haven't had any major incidents of violence at our school. I think that's a plus for us. We have not had a whole lot of drug problems to the degree that we have identified them as such. We have drugs on the school, and I think people are foolish to say that they are drug-free no more than a society is drug-free. Mm-hmm. But how you deal with them, I think, is so important. That has been our major challenge. I say we are like Avis. We've always got to try harder. We take nothing for granted. In other words, it's important that when people talk to the principal of E.E. Smith, when they leave, they feel good about whatever it is. I might not agree with them, but they feel like they had an opportunity to be heard. And whatever my rationale is should be a sound, justifiable one. Okay. And most of the people I hope feel that way about it. I don't just say no to say no, mm-hmm. but yes to say yes. What is it we're doing and why are we doing it? And is it in the best interest of the young people? And everybody wants to see their kids do well. Mm-hmm. But they want you to be fair.
Of course.
Yeah, and they can tell when you're not fair.
And the children really can tell.
No doubt about it.
How much administrative power and control do you feel that you have over your school site and your responsibilities?
More than I ever had. Because with the new administration and the new regime, the superintendent's attitude now is, and the national trend is to looking towards site-based management. And we have a building leadership team that's being expanded to do more and more and give me more input on the kinds of things we're doing in our school. We have a communications council. Well, that's really something we've had here for many years. We had that when we were all black. We had people from the various attendance areas to have parents to come in for a little PTA council once a month. That never stopped. And now everybody's doing that. And I really feel good about that kind of thing. I feel like that the superintendent holds me responsible for decisions, and whatever I decide, I should be able to justify. And he should be able to support, because when he talks to me about it, I should have a sound reason and rationale for doing it. And he gives me that prerogative.
Mm-hmm. How did the desegregation of schools affect your role as a principal?
Well, when it really began back in the 60s, I was an assistant principal. Shortly after, I became a principal. And it was a problem, it was a challenge to, with PR, to sell yourself in your school. I was a junior high principal in 71, and there were people there who did not want to be there, who had been assigned to the school, could not afford to go anyplace else. And they watched me very closely. And it was my job, however, to let them know that we were trying to provide the best education possible for all of our young people, regardless of their origin or ethnic group. And I was very concerned about each and every one of them. And they watched me very closely to see was I a fair person and how I dealt with their young people. I think once most of them realized that I didn't have a genuine interest in the youngsters, I think it became less of a problem. We certainly have not turned a corner in that arena. There's a whole lot of work to be done. Some of the things that were once overt are now covert. And the feelings of people have really sort of been hidden and disguised behind facades. but some of them still have those feelings. But people in general will respect intelligence, they'll respect persons who are sincere, they'll respect fairness. I think for some it's more difficult than others, but if you have those kinds of things to your advantage, then I personally feel that you are halfway there. Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy your job?
I do.
And why?
Well, I enjoy seeing youngsters grow, mature, and prepare themselves for the next step. I love the challenge of the person whom somebody says can't do it, and seeing some of those people become able to do it. I guess I'm a strong supporter of the underdog, the kid whom nobody else wants to deal with. I want to know why not. And I guess I get my greatest thrill when I see those kids who come in the 10th grade that nobody wants to deal with, graduate from here, and feel like they're somebody because we cared about them. Mm-hmm. And I think the school adult family supports me very much in that, and we all feel like that once they leave here and do not complete their education, we must feel that we have done everything within our power to help them. And if we are not, if we have not, it's our fault. If we have, it's theirs. Mm-hmm. And all of us have to buy into that.
And you, I want to say preach it, but you teach that.
To the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. By precept and example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you consider the major problem of your principalship?
Finding enough time. that really is time management, you know, and I read a lot about it and I've done a lot of things with it in the effective schools work. One of the pieces we had to do for homework last week was to take a Tuesday and record everything we did. And it was a ball game Tuesday. And I start every morning at 8. We start school at 8:30. All of the assistants are here, associates are here when I get here. But by the same token, I basically stay until 6 every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually the last to leave along with the AD. But, you know, even in that time, I do most of my paperwork after 4 o'clock because I like to be out there with it. But, you know, the demands from the state level and the federal level of accountability through in the name of writing documentation for things has gotten so enormous that a lot of times I cannot do what I like to do, and that is get more involved in the classroom with teachers. But I have to fight through that and make way to do it because that's what I'm really here for.
What do you consider the most rewarding about your principalship?
As I said, seeing the youngsters grow and develop and watching them come across the stage and knowing that maybe because we touched them, they have learned.
Now, taking in consideration that there are only, less than 40 black high school principals with graduating classes in the state, if you knew of a young person, male or female, black, that wanted to become a high school principal, what advice would you give?
One, keep your mind open to learn. Don't be afraid of a challenge. And let people know that you really are interested. I think sometimes some of us are a bit too reserved. We sit back and don't project ourselves. Nobody can read your mind. I just talked to a young man tonight about a position as principal. I was saying to him there are some things he needs to do to help himself. You got to do some things to help yourself. And so I think, and like I say, I love to read. And every minute I get at home or someplace, you know, I have a favorite, my wife keeps magazines at my favorite spot, and I won't say where that is. Mm-hmm. But you can imagine what I'm saying. When I mm-hmm. go there, mm-hmm. there are books for me to read.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my son, my youngest son is only 15 years old. He has done the same thing now. But see, I love to read. What is the research telling us about things? What is it that we need to do? What direction are we taking in education? What do we mean by the information age? What's happening with schools of choice? What's going to make a difference in the next 10 years in education as we maybe move away from the mandatory busing? We may be doing that. So what's our challenge going to be? Is it going to be that the schools with the strongest program, with providing the best education from things that are measurable, mm-hmm. will be the schools that will survive? If so, what should I do at East Smith to prepare us and to continue to develop a foundation for that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I see it. I don't think I'll be doing this a whole lot longer, let's just face it. Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed what I have done, and God has been good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never thought I'd be principal this year.
I see.
Never thought I'd be. Mm-hmm. That was farthest from my imagination. I thought I'd done real well when I became a junior high principal.
Well, do you feel like you had a sponsor, in a way, someone in the other culture that kind of affirmed
you? Well, let me tell you what happened to me.